Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. When I started my podcasting activities about half a year ago, I made a little survey amongst my potential listeners and asked them, what is the optimal length of a podcast episode for you? The answer was pretty clear, was 20 to 30 minutes. Every now and then, I have something I talk about a little longer, up to an hour or even longer, and I separate these episodes into two. And today we have one of these episodes. I have part one here of the monkey's brain and the rolling robot, which is on autonomous driving. Now we'll talk about all the backgrounds of autonomous driving in this episode. And next week it will be about the user experience, the ethical and the technical and the legal problems connected to autonomous driving. So have fun with the first episode on autonomous driving here. The monkey's brain in a rolling robot, the future of automated driving. The monkey's brain, I really like this picture, comes up in the Buddhist meditation. The Buddhist monks, when they meditate, and when you do this, you find out that this is true. Our brains are association machines, so we jump from one thought to the next, and we have this thought, and then we jump to the next, and we jump on. Particularly when you have no external input or low external input, and then your thoughts start wandering around. And the Buddhist monks compare this with a monkey jumping around in a tree. The monkey's brain also stands for the genetical heritage that we have. We have very similar brain structures to most of the other animals on this globe, particularly to mammals. So this monkey's brain in the rolling robot, the monkey's brain has these two meanings. The rolling robot is a automated autonomous car. And what I will talk about is the misfit that we have between the requirements of this rolling robot and the monkey's brains that we have in our heads. Autonomous mobility is one of the big dreams of mankind. A good example of that is the Heaven's Trionfo, a mechanism they used in the theaters of the 16th and 17th century in Europe. And they put enormous amounts of effort into mechanisms to have vehicles flying autonomously over the stage to give the impression that there is a little car or a vehicle flying over the stage. And this is totally autonomous, that there is no external force driving that. The inhabitants of these cars, the persons using it, were never humans. They were always gods. So the gods had the authority, they had the allowance. They could fly autonomously over stages, through the air. And that shows how big the dream was at that time, that the inventors just didn't allow humans to use their invention, but that this is a sheer thing connected to gods. Not so far in the past, but also a very relevant picture is one you see in almost every presentation on autonomous driving. It's a picture of GM from the mid-50s, where these typical mid-50s cars with the rocket wings in the back and then the rear ends are driving on magnetic rails on a highway. And you can see a family in there sitting around a table. So the father is in the driver's seat, but it's turned around, and he's watching his family playing a game. And this picture created a lot of the idea of what autonomous driving is, and it is taken as an indicator that autonomous driving is something people are very much driven by, people are dreaming of, and yeah, we are close to making this a reality. Another way of autonomous driving that some of us experience is when you have a chauffeur, when you have a driver. So if you want to have an autonomous driving experience today, you just sit in the rear seat, you take a taxi, and somebody else is driving, and you can enjoy the ride in whichever way you want to. And by the way, this is used as test environments for autonomous driving, for the user acceptance of autonomous driving. It's called Wizard of Oz testing. So you are sitting as a driver in a car believing it is driving autonomously, but there is a real human driver hidden somewhere and driving this car on a test track or even on real roads. A bit background in the beginning. There are different levels of automated driving, and there are various systematic approaches of creating different levels. They all deal with the type of division of tasks between the human and the rolling robot. So basically, who's doing what, which part of the driving task or which part of the machine, man-machine system task is performed by the human, and which part is performed by the automation mechanism, by the software or by the machine. So you have all these different systematic approaches, and the one that has the largest acceptance in the automotive community is the systematic created by the SAE, the Society of Automotive Engineers, an American organization, US-American organization, that puts out various standards and recommendations, and they put out that recommendation, and it is very useful, it is very systematic, it is pretty obvious, and so it finds a very good acceptance in the automotive community. And so if you talk to someone out of the car industry, and he or she says, well, we have level 2 automated driving implemented in our cars, then this person is with a very high chance referring to level 2 of the SAE and not of any other organization that puts out systematics. Let's run through this. There are levels 1 to 5, 5 levels in this one, plus that there is one more, that's level 0. People often miss that. They said, the 5 levels of SAE. No, that's 6 levels of SAE that we have. And level 0 means zero automation. Level 0 means all parts of the core driving task are performed by the driver, by the human, by the monkey's brain sitting behind the steering wheel and steering the car. So there is no support by the car. Level 1 supports one dimension of driving. So the machine supports one level of the driving task, one dimension of the driving task, either lateral or longitudinal. Two typical technologies in that are lane assistants. They take over the lateral driving task. So the machine takes care, the car takes care that you remain in the lane, that the lateral driving is performed correctly. And you as the driver, the human, have to take care about the longitudinal dimension. Or the other way around, the car takes care about the longitudinal driving task, and you as a driver, you have to take the steering wheel and you have to take care about the lateral driving task. A typical example is an automated cruise control, including automated distance control. So you turn it on, you say, okay, I'm going to drive 1.5 seconds behind the car in front of me, and I will drive a maximum of 120 kilometers per hour. You can adjust that. And then the car remains the distance to the car in front, or if there is no car in front, it goes up to the speed that you have programmed into it. So that's level one. One dimension of the driving task is performed by the machine, and all the rest is performed by the human. In level two, surprise, surprise, two dimensions of the driving task are performed by the machine. This means longitudinal control and lateral control are performed by the machine. The car drives in the lane, it drives incorrect distance, it drives with a maximum speed. So all this is controlled by the car. And one could say that that's it. I mean, we have fully autonomous driving. The car is driving laterally and longitudinally correctly. And so there shouldn't be any problem. Well, that's not the entire thing. But with level two, we have reached this, let's say, driver assistance. We have brought the driver assistant to a completely new level. The idea behind level two is that the driver is supposed to be in control of the driving performance of the vehicle at all times. So we can take the feet off the pedals, we can take the hands off the steering wheel, but we need to keep our eyes on the road and our brains in the control loop. This is the typical level two situation, and you can find this on various vehicles out there on the streets. That's if you take one of these very latest cars, luxury cars, and you have these level two very often implemented there. In some cars, it's just a simple button press that you do. And then those cars in certain situations, in limited situations, for example, on autobahns, on highways, it takes you correctly from over long distances. And sometimes you have to do things so that the car knows that you're still awake, that you're still in the loop. For example, rattling the steering wheel, which from my point of view perverts the idea of level two automated driving a bit, because you can take the hands off the wheel, but you have to bring it back every 10 to 15 seconds. But anyway, it supports the driver. I was driving with a level two car over longer distance a few weeks ago, and it very well supports the driver, and it has quite some advantages. But it puts on the monkey into your brain, because you don't have to use your entire mental capacities to control the vehicle, but you can wander around with your thoughts and jump through the tree with the monkey brain that you have. Level three is basically like level two, but the system is so advanced that you can take your eyes off and your brain off for a certain amount of time in certain situations. So the car allows you to read a book or check your smartphone or do whatever you want, and it drives under certain conditions in certain environments autonomously. It drives by itself, and You don't have to do anything to control the car. The big problem on level 3 is you need to return into the driving task every now and then. If the car has a problem, it indicates this problem and you have to return, which from our point of view is a fair deal. The problem is that you have to return within a few seconds. That's what the rules say. The driver needs to return within a few seconds to the driving task. All research I am aware of shows that you need at least 40 seconds, 60 seconds, sometimes up to 120 seconds to build up a completely elaborated, fully working situation awareness. Situation awareness means that you know what's going on, why is the stupid car ringing here, why do I need to return, who is where, who is moving around me, where am I, what am I supposed to do, what's going to happen next, and how can I avoid the disaster that may come up when the car is not able to drive by itself anymore. And the few seconds the regulation is talking about is interpreted as 3 to 4, or maybe 5 seconds of time that we have. And then you see that there is a gap between the 3, 4, 5 seconds on one side that the legal corpus is allowing us and the minimum 20 up to 120 seconds that you need to build up a full situation awareness. So there is a lot of problems buried there that we need to solve. And some of the industry experts believe that if we don't solve level 3, we're going to kill the entire automated driving story. Some others say, well, then let's drop level 3, but that is problematic because we also have level 4. And level 4 is basically a more elaborated level 3. So the car can perform any driving task under any condition by itself. But we are not really sure whether this is really true. So the driver needs to return into the driving task, but there is a few minutes time opposed to a few seconds on level 3. On level 4, the driver has a few minutes to return. This is something I can believe in. This is something that it will work, that is possible. And to build level 4 cars, we will probably need a lot of experience on level 3. This is why I said it's not so easy to skip level 3. But on level 4, that is good. Plus the fact that level 4 performs more driving situations, for example, like automated parking, automated unparking, so that you can not only under certain and defined conditions, but on almost the entire trip that you have from A to B, putting your car out of the garage, entering the car, then the human programs the destination, and then basically all the rest is performed by the car. So pulling the car out of the driveway and then going onto the streets, then driving in urban areas, driving on rural roads, onto the highway, and then parking the car at your destination. All that is basically performed by the car itself. So on levels 3 up to level 4, we will have interior architectures as we know it today. So there will be a steering wheel, there will be a pedal, there will be instruments showing data on the trip, there will be a designated seat for somebody that is in control and in responsibility on the entire driving task. So there is a priority seat and then the car. So in Germany or in most countries, Western countries, it's on the front left. On some, like in England or other British dominated parts of the world, it's on the front right. But there is one special seat in the car that we have. And there's instrumentation, steering wheels, and paddles. Level 5 then is fully autonomous driving. So that is what we will not have: a steering wheel, no specific instrumentation, no special driver. Basically, driving parts, you just enter it, you sit down, and from wherever the car knows where you want to go, either you program it in the car or you program it up front and send it to the car, or whatever scenario you can think of. There are many different ones discussed, and there will be different use cases and different scenarios. But the car will know where to go, and then it does everything by itself. And it takes you from A to B, wherever A is, wherever B is, and just drives you the entire way. That is level 5. That is then autonomous driving, opposed to automated driving on the lower levels we have here. So much on the systematic behind this, so much background information. Question is, why does it make sense to have autonomous driving? I mean, that's the question that's always driving me when I'm working, when I'm doing my keynote speeches, when I'm doing my consultancy work, when I work with my clients. The question always is, why does it make sense? And technology, from my point of view, should not be defined, but what is possible, but it shall be defined, but what makes sense. So what is usable? What makes users' lives better? And so the question, what is the sense of autonomous driving? The first one is safety. Today, 90% of all car accidents have human causes, are based on human error. That was different in the early times of automotive. Very often things broke, tires blew up, then engines broke, or gearboxes broke, or the brakes broke. Whatever happened, there was a lot of technological failure in the early days. But today, that is different. There's hardly any serious problem, unpredicted sudden problem that we have. Okay, maybe a tire blows up, but that is very seldom. So 90% of all accidents involving a car have some kind of human error, some kind of human cause as a reason. And we will eliminate that with a well-defined automated driving procedure. It does not mean that we go down to 10% in the first step, but long term, I think it is possible, maybe even less. In the beginning, we will, of course, have machines killing humans, which surprisingly is something we as humans do not accept as much as we accept humans killing humans in cars, but that's a different topic. We will reduce the number of accidents and fatalities in traffic drastically with autonomous driving. Another point is more people are becoming mobile. More people get the chance to have a personalized private or partially private mobility that we have. So my father, for example, he is physically handicapped. And I'm very happy that he gave up driving a few years ago. And today he's calling a taxi or taking public transport if he wants to travel. But with an autonomous car, he would have probably even more mobility, easier mobility, more personalized mobility. So that is a reason. Another one is my youngest son is mentally handicapped, so he's not able to travel alone. But with an autonomous car that I send him to the place where he lives, he could enter that and then drive to my home fully autonomously and could visit me anytime he wanted to. So those are, and we have these aging societies. We have many people that have difficulties in being mobile. So at the end of the day, more people would have the chance to travel when we have autonomous cars. Autonomous cars are cleaner, trips are optimized, and in most of the scenarios, when we talk about level 4 and level 5 autonomy, there is a communication between the cars and between cars and infrastructure. So there's a lot of data exchange, and this will allow in the planning of the trip and in the when the trip is conducted, when the car is driving, will allow an easier, smoother, better traffic flow, and with it at the end of the day, even with electric cars, a cleaner, a more energy efficient way of travel. And that is something, the final point, why does it make sense to have autonomous cars, is something people think of very often at the first. That is that you can use the time that you gain for something else. Audi calls this the 25th hour. So if you have a 1 hour commute every day and you are driving today, then you can use this time either for work or for leisure things, for gaming, for shopping, whatever. There are many different activities you can perform when you do not need to drive anymore, particularly on levels 3 and up, or only on levels 3 and up. You can check mails, you can make phone calls, you can talk to people in the car, you can play a game, you can do some shopping. By the way, one of the reasons why Amazon was very much interested in autonomous driving, because they believe that this 25th hour, the additional time that you have, is some time you could spend on their shops and spend some money for them. If you look back in autonomy, I mean, some of that, what I just explained, is partially there. And even in the past, we had various parts of the driving process, of the entire driving process, that were automated pretty early times. So when you had a car 100 years ago, you needed to do some fine-tuning of the ignition. You needed to just, the point in time when the spark plug put out the spark needed to be adjusted according to various parameters. And well, I would not know how to do this if you give me a car like this. I mean, I don't know whether any of you would be able to make this fine-tuning of the ignition. Then we have automatic gearboxes that take over the gear changes, the adaption of the gearbox automatically. And in some countries like the US, for example, automatic gearboxes are the absolute standard. So manual gearboxes are the absolute exception, so that it counts as a big advantage to drive a hand-driven gearbox. It's the stick box, I think it's called there. Anyway, that is coming, and if we get electric cars, we will not have gearboxes anyway. But that was a very early automation of the driving process. Others are more secondary functions, like rain sensors, turning on and off the windscreen wipers, the automatic high beam control that we have, the distance cruise control that we have. So all these things are available. They have different levels of maturity, but they are in cars, and they're accepted as more or less standardized technologies in vehicles. Now, and that is the game changer, this is the reason why automated driving is so much under focus at the moment. Now it comes to the control of the lateral and the longitudinal guidance of the vehicle. So the core driving task, that's going to be controlled by the machine in the future. And level 2, as I described, is it is here. We have it. You can buy it. You can go out and you can buy a level 2 car. Level 3 has the problems I described with the entire handover procedure, because there you have on level 2, 3, and partially on level 4, you still have a combined effort of the human and the rolling robot, of the monkey's brain and the rolling robot, they need to work together on these levels. And so you have to design the handover procedures. You have to design this common work that they have to perform. And so this is the point where I believe that level 3 has serious problems. Levels 4 and 5 will come with the higher levels. My personal idea is it will be later than we expected. So 5 years ago, one of the big automotive suppliers, first-tier suppliers, said in 2022, 2023, we will have level 4 and 5 on streets. No, I don't think so. We will not have it. We will see this, but we will see this at a later point in time. And if you look at the activities of the car makers, of the automotive OEMs, then you will find out, you will see that these activities are cut down. It costs a lot of money, all the sensors, the electronics, the software that you need, all the mechanics behind it, that costs a lot of money, all the testing procedures, all the safety and security procedures that you need to have. All that is not for free, and at the end of the day, we have a product that works, and if we implement level 2 and maybe level 3, which is still costly but not as much as 4 and 5, we have a solution out there that works. And so if you see the budget cuts at OEMs as far as autonomous driving is concerned, my belief is it will take a few years longer than we expect. Don't pin me down on an exact number. But 10 years, I think, is realistic until we have a serious car that is fully autonomous. So more and more specific activities today are being taken over by the vehicle. For example, parking, unparking the car, driving on a highway, on an autobahn. For example, driving in a traffic jam with a traffic jam assistant. So this is the level 2 automation that we have, specific situations where you control the car. And we will go beyond this in a foreseeable time frame. The car manufacturers, as I said it, are restricting their activities at the moment. They are limiting the budgets. This one of the reasons, I think, is that electromobility is forced by politics, by the legislation, by the regulators onto the streets, and that has a higher priority. So the development budgets, the people are put onto that one at the car makers and the suppliers, and we have a solution for driving. So the pressure is not as high in this area as it is in the electrification of the drivetrain. I read a Prognos study. Prognos is a market research institute, and they put out a study on autonomous driving lately. I read this, and they said fully autonomous driving widespread in 2040. This matches my forecast, first serious cars in 2030. So the problem we will see is that we will have traditional vehicles until 2050 and beyond. So we have mixed traffic. And the real advantages, the full advantages, for example, like safety or smoother traffic, they will become visible, they will become, big, relevant when we have autonomous driving only. As long as we have mixed traffic, as long as humans are involved in some of the cars in the driving task, maybe even on level 0, we will have accidents and not optimized traffic flows. So it is beyond 2050 that we will have a fully autonomous fleet with all the advantages I described. This was the first episode on the monkey's brain in a rolling robot on autonomous driving. next week. Looking forward to the second episode, which has a stronger focus on user experience and autonomous driving. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.